Mr. President, thank you very, very much for sitting down with us today. I'd like to start by asking you, what can the United States and Iran do to improve the relationship between these two countries and help improve the situation in the region?
I believe that the best approach is to revise the visions that we have with respect to international affairs. If we are able to take a different look at the situation and approach them differently from what we have today, it's quite natural that confrontations will cease, but without that, there will be no cooperation, in fact, because I believe that what is necessary is to connect thoughts and viewpoints, and that will pave the way for larger decisions.
What are you hoping to get across? What message are you hoping you'll be able to send through your speech today at the United Nations?
I'd like to discuss a series of issues on the agenda for my discussions here. And primarily, I'd like to emphasize that the world needs a new system. Today's conditions cannot go on the way they are. In other words, the status quo cannot keep. The economic conditions around the world, cultural problems, as well as challenges in the security arena, have reached a point where we can really not take any more of any of it at many levels. In fact, there seems not to be a clear prospect for the future on any of these fronts. So we really do need fundamental changes. And I believe that we must be unanimous in the need for such change in order to bring it about.
In early October, high-ranking members from the Obama administration, along with the permanent members of the UN Security Council and Germany, will meet with members of your government. I understand you are now saying your nuclear program is on the table. What changed your mind?
We have not actually changed our mind. Our nuclear file will be pursued in the IAEA in accordance to international law and based on the need to observe the rights of the people of Iran in this respect. Like the past, we will and shall welcome future talks. And I believe that it can allow us to raise very important issues. For example, to discuss the world economy, world security, and international relations. With respect to international and security issues, in my mind, the banning of biological, chemical, and nuclear weapons is very crucial. I believe that, in fact, it can be a good starting point for further cooperation. In fact, a starting point for working together, in other words. We believe at the same time that we need to enhance ways to allow countries to use clean energies, alternative clean energies in the nuclear field. This can, in fact, be a subject of cooperation for us. And at the same time, we are ready to offer some solutions that take into consideration the needs of mankind in order to resolve the current economic crisis. I think, really, that international relations should be based on friendship and on the principle of justice for all nations. These are issues that can be put on the table for further discussion.
So I'd like to get more specific. You will discuss your country's nuclear program.
بحث خواهید کرد در موردش در این جلسه؟
البته ما یه
We have a reactor that actually produces nuclear medicine based on radioactive technology. And for that reactor, we need enriched fuel at the level of 20%. We are prepared to speak about it and purchase the fuel if it is available to us. So this can be a good issue to discuss as well.
You claim you are developing peaceful nuclear energy. If that's the case, why does Iran continue to block full inspections of all nuclear facilities?
We have not blocked that inspection. In fact, if you look at the numerous reports issued by the International Atomic Energy Agency, it indicates that the agency has access to our facilities and that, in fact, it has not seen any deviation from the peaceful path with respect to our program. But I'd like to ask you, exactly which country in the world does possess the nuclear bomb today? So, in other words, which country should be controlled? Those that have nuclear bombs and have, in fact, used it in the past? Or countries that really don't have a bomb? Well, what's the point of controlling countries that don't have a bomb? I mean, how can we really help humanity? How can we help promote security? I think what really matters is to destroy the stockpile of nuclear weapons that already exist. There are countries with factories that are producing nuclear warheads day and night. And I think that's where the inspections are necessary.
The International Atomic Energy Agency, Mr. President, has complained that they have not been given full access to all your facilities. And inspectors confirmed that Iran had 1,300 centrifuges. Last November, you said you had 5,000. And a recent report leaked from the IAEA says you have, quote, sufficient information to design and produce a workable implosion nuclear device. Yet you continue to refute this. Why?
Could you please let me know where was this report by the agency, in fact, released or published? How come is it that we haven't really read about it? I mean, if you can just give me the number for the report and the date it was issued, I could take a look at it.
I'm sure we can make that available to you.
I would appreciate that if you could make sure you do, because based on the last official report by the agency issued in September, it was said that Iran had not deviated from its peaceful nuclear path. You see, the question I raised was quite simple and clear. There are countries that have 10,000 nuclear warheads. Don't you believe that those are the ones that need to be inspected instead of the countries that don't have them? I mean, which one is more dangerous for the world? And which country should exactly be concerned here? Should Iran be concerned, or the ones that possess 10,000 nuclear bombs? I think it's us who has to be concerned, who needs to be concerned, and that's exactly why we are calling for the banning of nuclear weapons around the world. I believe that, in fact, we need to revisit our outlook on this subject. The way different states approach the subject should fundamentally change.
What countries are you referring to, Mr. President?
Well, the country that we're in right now.
And we have signed the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty, as your country has.
But then if that's the case, to which country do these 10,000 nuclear warheads belong? I mean, there are countries that are producing the fourth generation of nuclear bombs. I think it's the U.S. Government that is doing it, as well as some other member states of the U.N. Security Council. I think that approaching world affairs as such is has to change. There is international law, and if it's there, it's for everyone. And if we want justice, we have to want it for everyone. We believe that all nuclear weapons have to be banned. And at the same time, that all nations should have access to peaceful nuclear energy. It's quite clear, our position.
Except some might say Iran is the largest sponsor or the biggest perpetrator of state-sponsored terrorism and has produced inflammatory rhetoric along the lines that Israel should be blown off the map. Given those things, can you understand the concern the international community may have about Iran in particular?
We have, I believe, very good relations with different countries around the world, with nations around the world. We have very sincere and friendly relations. We do not define our lives based on what others say about us. We define our lives based on the truth about our lives and based on the principle of the need to follow the law and to reach out a hand of friendship to others.
Well,
it's quite clear who supports and sponsors terrorists these days. I mean, it's a question that's quite clear. I mean, the terrorists in Afghanistan and Iraq, I ask you, are they more powerful today compared to before the invasion of these two countries by U.S. and NATO troops? We all know that the terrorists in those two states are much stronger today than they were before. And the production of illicit drugs has actually tripled or even quadrupled on many levels. So what we are trying to say is that militaristic policies around the world will not offer a solution to the problems confronting us. From the first day that U.S. forces entered Iraq and Afghanistan, hundreds of thousands of people have lost their lives. So who exactly is the terrorist here? Let's speak about the bombs that have been dropped over the homes of people on villages and even on wedding receptions. Whose bombs are these? So who exactly is the terrorist here? In Gaza, there are thousands of tons of bombs that have been dropped over the heads of people there. 1,300 women and children lost their lives there. And defenseless people. So who exactly is the terrorist here? Those who announce beforehand and name people and say that we are out there to assassinate them? Who exactly is the terrorist here? Just recently, I was threatened too. I heard about it. Some European politicians and American politicians actually said that there was a threat on me. So who is the terrorist here? Who is the terrorist? I mean, with respect to Palestine, I've always raised a very clear question. What I'm saying is that we need to ask ourselves, where did the events of World War II happen? Well, the answer is it happened in Europe. So who killed 60 million people during World War II? It were people that belonged to the European governments of the time. Some European governments at the time. So what does this have to do with the Palestinian people? Why do we use the murders of World War II as a pretext to kill Palestinian people now? So the questions I ask are clear ones.
During and after the presidential election, Mr. President, thousands of opposition supporters and journalists were arrested, badly beaten, and tortured. One woman, 27-year-old Nada, as you know, was shot to death while protesting, and her death was captured on a cell phone camera. Here is a shot of that cell phone picture, which I'm sure you've seen, correct? What would you say to her family?
We are very sorry that one of our fellow citizens has been killed as a victim of an agitational circumstance, an agitation that was carried out with the support of some American politicians, the Voice of America, and the BBC that actually promoted these agitations.
Do you really think so little of your citizens that they can be manipulated and brainwashed by Americans and the UK?
No, that is not what I'm saying. But I do say that some agitations from outside were there. I mean, there are plenty of full documents pointing to that. Regrettably, one of our citizens lost her life.
One?
No, well, I'm referring to the picture that you showed, the person that we were talking about, but over 30 people had lost their lives, and as a result of the situation after the elections, and our judiciary is actually looking at the cases now. I'm confident that the perpetrators of those acts will be punished. Ms. Neda Aga Sultan was killed in the midst of a chaos. Do you know this picture?
No.
Do you know her?
No.
Well, rightfully so. Because American politicians do not want American people to see what goes on around the world. She's a lady, a mother, who lived in Germany. Somebody attacks her. She goes to the court along with her child and husband to complain. The person who attacked her he goes to the court, which is supposed to be the safest place, attacks this woman and kills her with 20 stabs of a knife in front of the court, in a place that's supposed to be a safe haven for everyone. And where her husband tries to protect her, the police actually shoot at her husband in Germany. Just 2 months ago, after Ms. Neda Aga Sultan was killed, and you're telling me you didn't hear this story? The question I want to ask American, the U.S. media is, why is it that you were not informed about this event? What are the hands in the world that actually talk about Neda Aga Sultan and turn it into the number one issue in the world? And we, I have to say, are very concerned about the loss of her life as well, but at the same time forgets about other forms of loss of life, like this woman here. I mean, it's exactly the same policies and approaches that I spoke about early on in our interview that need to change. If we want law, it has to be for everyone. It has to apply to everyone. Now, just because this happened in Germany, and Germany happens to be an ally of the United States, doesn't mean that the law doesn't apply to them, or just simply because Germany belongs to the capitalist bloc.
Mr. President, 3 months after the protests, hundreds remain jailed and continue to be tortured solely for their dissenting political views. Isn't this, or doesn't this overt abuse of human rights discredit you within the international community?
How do you know that they were tortured?
Well, we've read testimonies from families whose loved ones were jailed and beaten. There are accounts from fellow journalists who were arrested and beaten. A member of your own parliament confirmed that a number of young people died at a prison holding protesters. The head of that prison was fired, and the documented case of the son of a political advisor who died in prison after being severely beaten. This is how we're aware of this
In Iran, the judiciary is an independent body. It does not make decisions based on political circumstances. Nor does it make decisions based on propaganda. It makes decisions based on the framework of law.
So you refute this.
Yes, the way it's said here. No, it's not the way you said. There were certain officials that violated the law, and the judiciary is looking into it, and they will be punished. Anyone who violates the law should be punished. It doesn't matter who it is.
Violating the law by protesting?
Yes. If the protests are illegal, that can apply to them. The law does apply to them. We have a law in our country, you know. On a daily basis, the number of people who are killed in the United States by the police exceed those who were killed throughout the protests in Iran post-elections. Just take a look across the country and you'll find higher figures.
Finally, Mr. President, last night in an interview with the Associated Press, you backed off your claims denying the Holocaust ever happened, but as recently as last week, you said the Holocaust was false, a lie based on an unprovable and mythical claim. Are you now admitting that the Holocaust, in fact, did happen?
Well, if we want to just say a myth or a story, there are three definitions for what it is. I'd like to give you the three definitions, and you tell me which one applies to the Holocaust. One definition is that there are stories that are untrue that are made to shape the views of people about certain subjects, or to create mythical heroes, or mythical forms of murder, or to turn and create really good people, make really good people out of these stories. One of the definitions of what a story is. A second definition is when an event does happen, but then the reality of the event is distorted, the truth about it is distorted and re-said in a different way. And that too can make a story. A third definition of a story is when an event happens, but the results and the consequences have really nothing to do with the actual event. For example, let's assume someone in Texas drinks alcohol and kills a few people. But then in New York, a teacher is taken based on the crime carried out in Texas and electrocuted. Well, which one of these definitions do you think applies to the Holocaust?
I'm not sure I follow you.
Well, I'd like to ask you to think about what I said. Something happened in Europe, an event happened in Europe, and you insist to tell me, to get me to say that it happened. And I want to say, well, you have a right to insist, and that's fine. So we'll assume that what you say about this event is true. Fine, we can put that aside and then ask ourselves, where exactly did it happen? In Europe. By whom? By a European government at the time. So what does this have to do with the Palestinian people?
No, but that's a separate issue. You have consistently denied the Holocaust happened. You have called it a lie. And I'm just curious. I have some photos. These are dead bodies from a German concentration camp taken by the Associated Press. Mr. President, is this photo fabricated? Is this photo a lie?
No. I'm asking you a different question. There are many historical events, similar historical events. Why is this one in particular so important to you?
Because you're denying it happened.
But in World War II, 60 million people were killed. Why are we just focusing on this special group alone?
We don't have to focus. It was part of the. It was a part of the genocide, a part of a larger genocide. So why do you refute that that part of the genocide took place?
Allow me to say what my position is. This is not what my position is at all. I think that there is an overemphasis on this issue in order to neglect the occupation of Palestine. We weren't around 60 years ago. And we don't know exactly what happened. But we do know that there is a genocide happening in Palestine now. So I'm asking you, what role did it is not a separate issue at all. We are using the Holocaust as a pretext to occupy Palestine, to establish the Zionist regime based on the pretext of the Holocaust. Allow me, I do request and urge you to expand on the historical aspect of this issue. I ask you again, why do you insist on this event alone, sir?
We're not talking about the aftermath of the Holocaust. We're talking about claims that you have repeatedly made. This is a separate issue, Mr. President, claims you have repeatedly made that it never took place. Again, I'd like to show you this photo if I could.
You're telling me it happened. Now, show this to a historian and tell me what the historian will tell you. And as far as historical and scientific issues are involved, we're not a layman to discuss these issues based on a layman's approach. I'd like to have a scientific and historical and academic perspective on any historical event that happened to guarantee that the logic of the discussion is there. What I'm saying is that if a historical event has indeed happened, then we must allow more further examinations of the event. That's fine. Why is it that anyone who raises any question about any aspect of the event is stopped? What is the mystery to this event? If you don't know about it, I'd like to tell you. It was a pretext to occupy Palestine. And that is unacceptable to us at all times. No scientist, no academic can accept the logic of this event. In the end, when it happened in Europe. So why do we need to examine a historical event now, here, today? Why is there such level of bias, so much rigidity over this issue? I mean, in the end, it's just simply because of the consequences, the aftermath that you said. If you move away the aftermath, and the consequences of this event, then the event is a standalone event, a piece of a part of history during which 60 million people were killed, and we are very sorry that it happened. And we're sorry for all the 60 million people that lost their lives equally. All of them were human beings. And it doesn't matter whether they were Christians or Jews or Buddhists or Muslims. They were killed. So we're sorry for everyone. But if we want to derive a conclusion from that event, to give ourselves the right to go and kill Palestinians, just the way it's done today, there's genocide in Palestine, then we really need to focus on the question of genocide on Palestine.
But if I'm following you correctly, Mr. President, you are in fact conceding that the Holocaust did in fact take place.
Well, you can conclude whatever you like from my remarks. But what I have before my eyes is the genocide that's happening right now. Why is it that our tongues are tied? Why is it that the tongues are tied here in the U.S. media? Why is it that your cameras are not focused on the genocide there? I mean, it's a serious question when you think about it. Just by accusing Ahmadinejad, you can't eliminate the reality on the ground there.
But one doesn't have to negate the other, Mr. President.
You are connecting two things. And I'm asking you to clarify on the connection between the two events. What is the nature of the relationship between World War II and the events that transpired and the Palestinian issue now? We don't live in the past anymore. We're alive now, here. So we must stop murders and killings now.
As you continue, though, Mr. President, to deny the existence of the Holocaust, it undermines your credibility on the international stage. I know that it alienates you from much of the international community. Many people think you're trying to delegitimize the very existence of Israel by doing this and to distract from other issues such as your nuclear program.
Are you concerned about me?
I'm asking.
You're telling me that I'm the one that's really being on the margins, but then you're expressing concern about me? But if that's the case, you really shouldn't be concerned about me. With these pictures and with these words, we can never give the Zionist regime any degree of legitimacy because it is a regime based on usurpation, occupation, and the murder of innocent people. Rest assured that neither history nor the states in the region can ever legitimize this regime. Or recognize it. If anyone wants to assist the Zionists, I think that they can do so by asking them to revisit the concepts of law and justice for all. I think that we need and they need to consider the fact that the Palestinian people, like everyone else, has the right to self-determination. Any Palestinian, wherever and of whatever creed and belief, Muslim, Jewish, or Christian, should have the right to self-determination now, decide about their own faith, and we should allow that to happen. Well, I wish you every success and thank you for this interview.
Thank you very much, Mr. President.